Hey guys, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndre, here with Alistair Weaver from Edmunds.com. Another episode of our Alistair and Edmunds, our CarCast and Edmunds podcast. The first episode, I think, went pretty well, although we talked mostly about what could potentially happen on your road trip with an EV. And for part two, I think we should definitely talk about what did actually happen on your road trip for EV. I know we were doom and gloom for 40 minutes last week, and they're like, but none of that shit's going to happen. Don't worry about it. You're going to be fine. And just do it. Just a road trip to Monterey, LA to Monterey. Yeah. How'd it go?
Really badly. Do you want to rant? The vacation was beautiful. We had a beautiful vacation with the family. It was interesting being up, like, because I was up for car week 3 weeks ago, and I was back actually staying at the Quail Lodge, where the famous Quail event is.
Yeah.
But it was a very different world when it's not car week. So it was super nice to have a weekend with the family. But I'd convinced my wife and everything else that, like, the kids love the trucks. The kids are 4 and 18 months, so they're pretty small, but they just love the whole truck thing. And I was like, right, we're going to take the Rivian because it works, throw everything in. Great. So charged it at home, stuffed it full of electrons, and off we go. And then, of course, you're like mentally thinking about it. So, okay, we're going to drive for 2.5 hours. We're going to get the kids in the car at 7, set off about 7:30, drive for 2.5 hours, booked into a cheap motel somewhere up to 5, fast charger next to it, charge before we go to bed, jobs are good, and get up in the morning, complete the journey. Everyone wins. So that was the theory. So Electrify America should have 4 350-kilowatt chargers, as fast as you can do at the moment. Then one additional one, which was a bit slower. So we arrive at like 20 to 11 at night. Kids are sleeping in the back seat. Everything's well with the world. Turn up, none of them working. None of them, not one.
Yeah.
So it's all right. Now what happens? So then we looked across, and there's one other one, which instead of being 350 is 150. It's like, all right, we'll do that. And the problem with the Rivian is, if you look at the leaderboard on the Edmunds side, it's the least efficient. The truck is actually the second least efficient vehicle we've ever tested, because the Rivian R1S is now the most inefficient. So this thing needs a lot of charging. So it's like, okay, this could take a while. So we turn up at the 150 kilowatt charger, which is working. There's a guy with a Polestar plugged into it. So we sit there for a few minutes watching the guy charge his car. And he says on the computer, you can see on the screen, you know, he's 90% plus charged. So he also says by now, because the way that these vehicles charge is, once you get above 80, 90%, as you know, Matt, it tails off. So it charges much less quickly when the battery's almost full. So I'm looking at this, and it's charging at 6 kilowatts. And I'm like, that's less than my charger at home.
Yeah.
So I'm like, he's getting like 20 miles an hour probably at this stage into a Polestar. So I'm like,
if that.
What are you doing? What are you doing, dude? It's 20 to 11 at night. What are you doing? Okay. So eventually I like clicked it. I said, excuse me, how are you doing? You know, tried a bit of the old charm. He goes, yeah, I just had the car a couple of days, and, you know, quite a lot of the chargers aren't working. I've noticed that. It's like, yeah. So you'd like charge me 100%, or what's the plan here? Because I've got two little kids in the back, and they're going to wake up any moment, and my wife's getting more and more irritated. And he goes, well, actually, we're just finishing a documentary, and this is the first time we've had a car where we can watch like TV in the car. So anyway, my wife wants to watch the end of the documentary. So we're going to charge to the end of the documentary. So I'm like, well, you got here first. It's kind of your right. You know, you're still charging. Literally stood there. It's now like 10 to 11. And so we stand there for another 15 minutes. It's perfectly pleasant about it. But I didn't want to do that passive aggressive thing and just like stare at him for 20 minutes.
And listen, you can watch the documentary without plugging your car in. You're already at 90%. I get it. You're enthralled with this boring film, but you might as well just like, hey, I'm going to do you a solid. It's late at night. I see you got your truck and the kids, the family. Like, how about I? Yeah, sure. No problem. It's not like you're saying, will you pay for it too? You're saying, you know, how about you hang it up and you finish your documentary in the Arco parking lot or McDonald's or whatever. And then, you know, let us let us try a little.
Yeah, and I was almost at that point. You always get the point. It's like, oh god, I give him $20 to get to unplug. So anyway, then this goes on for a little bit. Then the kids wake up because they're now not moving, and we're sat in the truck. So kids start screaming. So my wife, not unreasonably, has a bit of a sense of humor failure at this point because we've got two screaming kids. It's 10 to 11 at night. We're in the middle of like a parking lot in some massive service station off the five. So eventually he unplugs, I plug it in. So it's like a 150 charger, which is actually pulling at about 70 kilowatts. Now, bear in mind, the Rivian's got a 200 kilowatt hour battery. So this thing's going to, I'm like, okay, we need to sit here for a while. So what do you mean a while? I'm like, you know, if we want to get enough charge to then get to Monterey in the morning, we're going to be here for like 40, 50 minutes. So this isn't going to work. Kids are now going nuts. So it's like, okay, like put in like 20 odd miles. And then at that point, we're like, let's unplug. We got to get to bed. So we wasted like, I don't know, hour and 20 minutes waiting for Matey Boy to finish his documentary. Then we get about 20 miles of charge. Meantime, I've tweeted Electrify America, you know, because obviously this makes all the difference. And they sent me one back that says, I'm just reading it now. Thank you for reaching out. We have looked into our site in Lost Hills, California. We can confirm that our team is aware of the concerns surrounding these charges. They are actively working to resolve this as quickly as possible. We hope to see you give us another try soon. Now, I know this social media stuff goes to like 15 committee meetings, but give us another try soon really wound me up because it's like, I don't want to give you a try. The kids are screaming. I want to charge my car. So anyway, rant over. So we go to the car park of the motel. It's like, oh no, we've got charging in the car park. Oh great. Wrong plug. So that won't work. Go to bed. Get up in the morning. Let's go and have some breakfast, charge the car up again, go back to the one plug that's working. Somebody's just plugged the lightning in. So I'd looked at the lightning charge, 30% of charge. I was like, this guy's gonna be here for like 3 hours trying to charge a F-150 Lightning. So it's like, oh, I just gotta give up. So back on the road, and then it's like, okay, where are we gonna go now? And then you've got to like look for another charging place. So we eventually found one in Paso Robles. That was Electrify America again. This one worked. Spent an hour charging it, which because you're only limited to an hour, which didn't quite charge the car all the way. But anyway, got us enough. Got to the hotel.
So that was a bigger charger, though. That was,
That was a bigger, faster charger, but
yeah.
it's still an hour in a Rivian, and the Rivian was hardly empty. But it's still an hour to put in like meaningful charge, and even then, it wasn't to 100%. So we get to the hotel. And it's like, okay, they're charging at the hotel. But it's got two like level two chargers, sort of thing that you have at home. So all right, two, 90 rooms. And then I've got a new pet hate, something that really wound me up all weekend, is people with plug-in hybrids that use the only car charger available in a hotel. So you've got like me in a Rivian, and you've got like other EVs around us. And some guy in like, I think it was one in an X5, one in a Volvo. So I'm going to plug it in. I'm going to leave it plugged in for like for about 15 hours, and I'm going to get 20 miles of charge, and that's going to support my gas engine. It's like, seriously, folks, if you've got a plug-in hybrid and there's all these people with BEVs around, there's only two chargers and they're all both really slow, you know, it's a bit rude.
And if you leave it in, so here's the next thing is like leaving the car parked and the charge is done. And you're supposed to get some kind of alert or something on your phone. Your car is done. Would you move your car or whatever? I don't know how often people move their car when that's done.
Well, because also it was like done at 3 o'clock in the morning, so I'm not setting an alarm to go and move it. I did try and be a nice human being, and if I was charging it overnight, would then get up in the morning and unplug it. But it's also just then like, what is extraordinary about all of this is just the stress that it brings. Like you're on a family road trip, and you're having to just build in this extra layer of complication. And arguments within the car about like what we're going to do if we stop there in the middle of nowhere. If we stop there, at least we might get lunch. And then every time we went back to the hotel, it was like a little game. It was like, oh God, is there anybody on the charger? Because if there is, we're going to have to like come up with a plan B and drive back into town. And it was just a It was a far worse experience than you kind of imagine. And it's not because there weren't enough chargers, it's because you're just nervous about the reliability of them and then the kind of etiquette of using them. And as you know, because we talked about enough, you know, we had a Tesla for 3 years, and my in-laws actually took the Tesla on a California road trip, and the Tesla infrastructure is just so much better. It is so much better, to the point where right now, if you're like serious about road tripping an EV, like, you need a Tesla. It was that bad.
So I was talking to a friend who just got an EV, and he's had some, I don't want to say debacles. He's just learning the process of driving an EV. But he said, I have a Tesla adapter. I don't know, some aftermarket adapter, something bought off of eBay or something, right? And because his other car, his wife's car, was a Tesla. So he had the charger at home. And then he got like a plug-in hybrid vehicle. And he used that adapter to charge at home his plug-in hybrid. And it seemingly worked for a while. And then some kind of software glitch in his vehicle, I guess, didn't like the adapter and broke his vehicle. So his plug-in hybrid was a Lincoln. And I guess the Lincoln with a Tesla adapter off of eBay and a Tesla charger in his garage broke the Lincoln. It like nothing would work. The doors wouldn't unlock. It was like locked. You had to get it towed to the dealer. They couldn't figure out what was wrong with it. It was a mess. And they had it for like a month. But he was like, hey, I tried the Tesla adapter with my Audi Q8 e-tron because it seemed to work. And I said, seem to work so far, because we don't know how many times you're going to be able to charge it. But he was saying, why can't I throw this thing in the trunk and then just try to roll up to a Tesla supercharger, you know, like whatever, like you said, throughout California or on the way to Vegas, would that work? And I don't know if you know the answer to this question. So I don't know if his home charger is like, it's just a charger and it's got a Tesla plug. But if you go to one of the superchargers, does it read a serial number? Does it read a VIN number? Does it know you're a Tesla? Like, how do people pay for it? His wife's Tesla, he would just roll up and I guess it would just charge the wife's card that's on file or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it does this sort of electronic handshake where you plug it in and it goes, okay, this is, you know, this is Matt's Tesla. I understand what it's doing. And therefore, it just pulls from your credit card. There is these things like I'm seeing somebody actually replied to me on Twitter about, oh, he's using this third-party adapter to Tesla. I mean, these things are like super complicated. So I have a kind of natural cynicism about like third-party solutions. This is why you're seeing Ford and others do these deals where, you know, soon you'll be able to use Tesla chargers for real, if you like. I have reservations about a lot of third parties because this is super complicated. It's not just like plugging in your kettle or plugging in a, you know, a gas hose. It's actually it's a big piece of kind of software and that's making it all happen. So yeah, it's also the other part of it is Tesla's just Tesla. Like, you plug it in, it talks to your car, it works. You know, I came to finish, you know, I could go on, there's more, but, you know, every time you stop, it's like, oh, is this Electrify America? Okay, that's a different app to EVgo. And I couldn't get the Electrify America app to work properly, so I used my credit card. And it's just like, it's just a lot.
It seems like a lot. We haven't really figured it out yet. But the idea of these car companies, Ford, GM, going, hey, we're going to, new cars in whatever, 24 or 25 are going to be Tesla supercharger compatible. But if I read it correctly, if I remember whatever the press release was, they were also saying if you don't get a 2025 Ford EV and you still have a Ford Lightning, there will be an adapter that Ford's going to sell. And I guess it does that handshake that you're talking about. Or I wonder if you know, like my friend's, you know, aftermarket adapter is going to work. I don't know that he's tried it yet. He's only got the vehicle for like a week and a half.
Yeah, you'd
hope. I don't know if anybody else has tried it. If anybody's tried it, let me know if you've tried it. Like,
I'd like to hear more about that as well. And
send us a note.
Yeah, I mean, you like to think that Ford could sort that out, because otherwise your residuals on your truck are going to be rubbish, because everybody's going to want the 25.
Right.
So you'd think they have to fix that.
And it seems like Ford would be like, okay, we have an adapter, right? We got a little, we got a pigtail that's going to work. It's 2 foot long and it's got a box on it or something. And it's, and it does the handshake for you and it figures it all out and it's going to be fine. Or we're going to do some over the air update to everybody's Mach-E and Lightning, and the handshake's going to be compatible and it's going to work, you know, with some kind of plug or whatever. You're right. Because what would be the resale after that? Like, if I have a Lightning, and if I can't use the Tesla chargers when they're available, and I get it, I got to pay for it and whatever, but then what's going to happen to my truck? You know?
But and the other thing about Tesla chargers at the moment is they're actually in pretty decent locations. One of the things, I went into Monterey and we went to the aquarium there, which is great, by the way. And it's like, okay, we're going to be here a few hours. I'm going to like top it up. So the onboard computer says, go to this hotel, there's a charge point thing. Fine. $60 to get into the hotel car park. And I was like, is this included if like I pay for the charger? And he's like, yeah, $60 just buys you like the slot in the hotel. But we're not sure that there'll be a charger spare. Right, all right. So scrib that. So the other one, it says, go here. So drive around the corner. This is in a council building, but it's Sunday. So there's a gate locked. So you can't like physically get to it. So there's no charge in Monterey that I can use.
All the stuff we talked about last week. I was like, what if you go to a hotel and you're not staying there, you have to pay? Or what if you go to an office building and the gates closed because your app told you it was in there? This is exactly what we talked about last week. Now you're feeling my pain.
And it's I know like Jim Farley, Ford CEO, went out on the road in a Lightning and had a similar experience. And to his credit, came out and spoke about how bad it had been and didn't try and sugarcoat it too much. And, you know, it's the same thing. It's like big fans of EVs. I think the Rivian's a great vehicle, really enjoyed it. But just so much hassle. And then coming back to complete the story, sorry if I'm going off on one a bit. So we get the car charged at the hotel. It's like, okay, we've now pretty much got this figured out. We know that one works in Paso Robles because we've been there. So we'll drive back there. We'll stop. We'll have lunch and we'll charge it. And then we should get back to South Bay, LA. So we drive, we pull up, it's working, happy days. Off we go for lunch. Restaurant's a bit slow. Kids need a pee. Kids need to run around the park. Kids faff around a little bit. So anyway, I'm like, I think I was like 25 minutes over like my allotted hour. So I get back. And when I'd left, in my defense, I think there were 5 chargers and 3 others were empty. So I was like, okay, I'm not going to stress it too much. So I get back and unplug, and somebody gives me like a dirty look from one of the other chargers. I thought, that's not a good sign. And then I find this little red piece of paper on the dashboard. It says, hey, I sat here for 20 minutes waiting for you. Please think of others next time. No other chargers were available. Now I have to drive to Atlas, Cadero, wherever that is. I hope this doesn't happen to you. And you know what? I felt really guilty.
Yeah, like, that one's like, on you. That one's I'm on like, you, because that's literally what happened with you on the way up with the guy with the Polestar. And he's like, I'm going to finish my documentary so you can watch a documentary.
I just felt like such an arsehole. I was like, well, you know, and the guy wasn't there. So I can say, well, you know, the kids had a pee and the restaurant was a bit slow and they didn't bring the check on time, because that was the reality. It wasn't like I wanted to get back on the road and get home. So, yeah, it was rubbish.
Here's the deal. We've got charger anxiety. We don't know what's going to happen. And now we're still figuring out charger etiquette, right? There's no real rule on it. There's no kicking you off. Like, at some point, assuming you can even get a car close enough to a car that's charging, if it was like, hey, it charges for an hour, then after an hour, it unlocks the charger and makes it able for you to pull the plug out. It shuts it, you know.
Yeah,
unlocks
that's a
it,
good idea.
Shuts
so
it down,
then
wraps up the billing, and then you can get in the slot next to it, which is probably usually a broken charger. Excuse me, and you can unplug it from the car that's done, And I get it. That guy, you know, had an upset stomach. He needs 10 more minutes in the restaurant.
I was like telling guy, like, I literally, like, you know, kid number one needed a pee. It's like, that's a big process. That's a, like, she's four. That's a 10-minute process. So
yeah,
it's, and then we drove home, so they called it another mile. And then it was like, all the Tesla supercharger there. And it was like a level two charger that took forever. And it was just it's a miserable. And like we talked about last week, you know, it's not the product. That the Rivian was great. Yes, the Rivian's a big truck and it's too heavy and it uses loads of juice. So you can say, all right, the problem is compounded in the Rivian because it takes so long to charge it because it's just got such a big battery and it burns through electricity really quickly. So it's an extreme example, but it wouldn't have made that much difference if we'd been in, you know, an SUV or something. It's just such a hassle. And unfortunately, like, we are in that place in my household where we're like the classic EV owner at the moment, because we have one EV, which is like my wife's car, and that's kind of our LA car. And then normally if we road trip, you know, fortunately with the job that I have, you know, we have access to different vehicles and we take a gas for plug-in hybrid or something. And it's just not good enough. And the industry has finally woken up too late to the idea that this is not a product solution. This is an infrastructure solution. We can't just have vehicles with like massive batteries that they're going to do 500-600 miles. It's not practical. It's not cost effective. So sort the infrastructure out.
Like, you're braver than I am. We went up to Monterey and, you know, Adam Carolla, we rolled up. He's like, yeah, do we want to take an EV? You know, what can we get? What can we try? It's a good story. And I was like, I'm not doing that. I was like, we're going to get a Toyota Sienna minivan. And it's all-wheel drive hybrid. It gets 40 miles to the gallon. And it has 475 miles of range on a tank of gas. We'll just drive straight to Monterey. We'll drive around for a week. We'll fill up before we leave town. And when I get back to LA, I'll still have 100 miles of range left on my tank of fuel. Like, it was totally the right decision, by the way. Your next Monterey trip, just go minivan. Just go full minivan or something.
Well, as you know, I went to Car Week in a Range Rover. And I drove back, admittedly without the family, but I drove back on my own, one hit, like 5.5 hours, full tank of gas, arrived, as you say, with like 150 miles left, had a little massage in the seat along the way. It was beautiful. So, yeah.
This was totally on you. If you were going to go yourself to Monterey for Car Week, you should have taken the Rivian and then saved the Range Rover for the family trip.
My wife said to me at one point, I think it's like 11 o'clock at night, and the 18-month-old was now screaming, and the 4.5-year-old has woken up as a result. And I said, you think this is a good story, isn't it? You're loving this for the story. You're like, you're going to go on the podcast and talk about this. And I was like, no, right now it's 11 o'clock at night. I just want to go to bed.
I just want to go to bed. I'll worry about this later. Although at some point, I could tell you were frustrated. I texted and I was like, hey, how's it going? I'm just curious. And you were just like, terrible. And I don't even know if I responded. I was just like, it was one word. I was like, that's enough. That's enough. That's all I needed to hear. It was going to be hit or miss. But all right. So, charging debacle aside, how is the Rivian?
The Rivian's great. I mean, it's funny, like where I live in, well, where you live as well, Matt, around LA, you're starting to see more and more R1Ts, particularly R1Ss. And I think the R1S is the SUV, the three-row SUV. And somebody from Rivian, actually, I bumped into Carl Week, and he told me that I think they're now selling 80% SUV, 20% truck, which I don't think is good for their bottom line. I think there's more margin in the truck. But the SUV's been a big success for it. It was a little bit like our Lucid originally, in that, you know, these things were launched quite early in their development cycle, and then they're trying to throw stuff at it. So since we bought it, we've done 17,000 miles now, they constantly updated it. And I mean both the software and the hardware. So it went in last week and they did some underbody cladding. They're going to replace it has this like electric cargo cover over the rear bed. And apparently they did it with one motor at one side, but that's proving problematic. So they're going to replace it with a two motor system. So that's going to be replaced. The hatch for the gear tunnel, which is this cool thing where you can like slide like golf clubs or something in behind the receipt. Those are really hit and miss on our vehicle. They're going to replace those. And all of this will be done for free. And basically somebody comes, picks the car up, drives it away, brings it back. So it's costing Rivian a ton of money, but it's not costing us anything. So we got the launch edition truck. So right at the beginning of the process. So it's got better and better, as has our Lucid. The only thing I would say is that I think Rivian were further along the journey to start with than Lucid wasn't. So we've had a lot less problems with the Rivian than we have with the Lucid. And I don't think there's ever been an occasion where we worried about the Rivian letting us down. And I really like it. I like it more and more the more time I spend with it. It's a really nice size of truck. So it's kind of like a bit bigger than a mid-size, but not full size.
Yeah.
It's got tons of cargo capacity because you've got a frunk in the at the front. You've got this weird gear tunnel, which is perfectly big enough for gear for golf clubs. That's kind of just below where the rear seat is. Then you've got a decent bed, and you've even got like a hatch under the bed where you could fit a spare tire, but most people wouldn't bother. So it's super practical. And for like a family vehicle, you'd love it. Like the kids love it. There's not masses of room inside. It's not like F-150 big inside. But it's just a nice thing. And of course, it's really fast. It's comfortable. The ride quality is still a bit truck-like. But I think it's a really good thing. And, you know, I would, if I had the money and was in the market, I think, you know, I would be seriously tempted by one. And I think now, you know, a year or two into its lifespan, it's, you know, it's in a better place.
And the SUV, by the way, sharp looking vehicle. I think it's good. And I'm seeing more and more of them around here, especially, you know, where I am in the Venice area. They've got an office over here, Rivian. So, you know, they're constantly like doing drives or, I don't know, some sort of design study or having people come by or whatever. It's not a dealer. It's a, I don't know, some sort of admin office or design facility.
Well, they have a dealer. Something. Yeah, they have a dealer. I mean, they've got, so it's not a dealer because they're direct, like Tesla, the direct to market. So I think you can go buy one from them. And this is also that Tesla experience thing that, you know, you're not really dealing with dealers. You buy it online and then, you know, it gets delivered or you pick it up at one of these kind of experiential places.
Yeah. And maybe that's what it is too. Maybe that's, you know, like a delivery location or something like that.
Yeah.
If you want to sit down and get the experience, get the walk through the vehicle and not have it come to your house, you want to do like whatever. So we see quite a few of them. Yeah. And I, this morning on my way here to work, you know, I passed by one and I was like, yeah, it's good. It's a good looking vehicle. And I haven't really gotten time to crawl around the SUV. Like a guy I know has the truck. He brought the truck over, you know, we got to crawl around it, and you're right, smaller than my F-150 Lightning, but you know, everything looked good. It's a good size. And, but the SUV looks interesting to me. It's definitely on my radar. It's like, maybe I want to get something a little bit smaller, but stick with EV for now. And the Rivian, I mean, there's, like you said, there's still some issues and, being the least efficient EV out there is kind of a thought. It's like, what's it going to cost to own it and charge it? And, but it's good. It's sharp, you know, but we're getting more competition, you know, anything from Mercedes to Kia, Mustang Mach-E. And so the times are kind of changing as far as what options are going to be available out there. Nothing's really leapfrogging anyone. This Mercedes concept sedan.
Oh, the CLA looks really cute, isn't it? I think really interesting. I think two big concepts came out of that, and the BMW Neue Klasse, which is the first BMW in a long time I've looked at and thought looks really cool.
I saw that too.
Like a hint of the new 3 Series.
It's interesting because kind of the profile and that that rear glass and everything has little Datsun 510 going on in it. It's got little Japanese sedan kind of look to it. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. It's not like a big hatchback or a huge swoop and whatever. It just looked more, I don't know, coupe-ish than anything. And Mercedes CLA, they were saying, hey, this is an interesting study for us because, you know, we think we can get to 400 plus mile range by being efficient. Like it's sort of the opposite of what you were talking about. They're saying, you know, lighter weight and rolling resistance and aerodynamics and all of these things, plus combined with software and hardware, like we think with a, all things being equal, sort of battery size being equal to a competitor, they think they can get more range out of just making a overall more efficient, maybe lighter, more aerodynamic vehicle.
Yes, which is kind of Lucid's argument as well. And, you know, the Lucid is a prime example of that. Super, you know, it's actually much more efficient. It's got, you know, great aerodynamics. There's a lot of really cool engineering that's gone into it. But then the reason it has such a massive range is because A, it's a sedan, and not many people want sedans anymore because it doesn't fit with the lifestyle. And B, it's on skinny, low rolling resistance tires. So when we did the Edmunds U-Drags and used those tires, everybody at Lucid went mad at us and said, like, why do you run it on like 19 inch, you know, all season tires? It's like, well, because that's the tires it came with. And if you want big range, you can run it on like skinny little tires. And if you get into our Lucid and you choose like full bore acceleration mode, I can't remember what it's called, track, I can't remember exactly what it's called. And it basically says, you know, are you like a, are you a good driver? Well, yeah, clearly. So you accept that. And then it's like, and then it says,
everybody
basically,
says
are
yes.
Are you running on summer tires? No. So you say yes anyway. And now you've got 800 horsepower on these like skinny little all season tires. But you need that for the range. So it's like, you can't have both. So Mercedes saying is like, we're going to do this really efficient little sedan on low rolling resistance tires and it'll go a long way. Great. But then that'll compromise, you know, the grip and the handling and the practicality because it's a little sedan. So, yeah, there's no easy win. But or you go down the Rivian route and just like, or the Ford Lightning route and just smack in as big a battery as you can, which is super costly, super heavy, and takes forever to charge and costs a load of money. So it's, yeah, there's a lot going on.
Right. There's. It gets more difficult to, you know, to have all of the incredible performance with the range and the big bragging rights with EVs for the past several years has been performance, because everyone's like, hey, we're 250 to 300 mile range. And now it's like, who's the fastest, coolest vehicle for 250 to 300 mile range. And now that we're kind of over that, or the manufacturers still have that vehicle in their lineup, now they're saying things like CLA going, well, what if you don't want the fastest vehicle? What if our EVs were 0 to 60 in 5.2 seconds, which is still quick, by the way. They're going, hey, if you could do it in 5.2 seconds, what does that mean for the range and the type of vehicle? So they're saying, well, first of all, we're going to do it with, I don't know, a CLA, a small sedan, or something to that effect, and go, this isn't the sportiest vehicle to begin with. This is just a nice four-seater, mid-size, you know, maybe smallish sedan.
Yeah. And a nice thing.
You know, and the concept is sharp looking. It's cool. It's and go, well, if you're fine with 0 to 60 in 5 point something seconds, and you're fine with a small sedan that sits low to the ground and is more aerodynamic, yeah, we can get you 400 miles of range. You know, you're not going to win the U-Drags.
But you're going to get to your hotel with your family, and your marriage might be in a better place when you get there.
Yeah, and on the way back from the U-Drag event, you're going to keep going and get home, and everyone else is going to have to stop and charge.
And somebody's not going to write you a red letter on red paper calling you an asshole. It's... Yeah, but it comes full circle what we're talking about. Like, if the infrastructure's there, it's not a problem. I mean, but there's nothing new in all of this. I mean, I remember like having you and I both know Ian Callan, who was the chief designer at Jaguar for many years. And, you know, I remember talking to him, and, you know, they'd made a conscious decision that, you know, if they wanted to, they were going to make their cars look beautiful. And yeah, aerodynamics was important. But if you want to make it fuel efficient, then it wouldn't look like a Jaguar anymore. So you've got to get the, you got to get the balance right. And same with EVs, like if you really want to be efficient, you're going to have those like sort of low profile, you're going to have skinny tires, and you're going to have those like aero wheel covers. You're not going to have like cool looking alloys.
Yeah,
and so,
yeah,
you know, it's all a balance. But yeah, I think that the mentality is shifting now to, okay, like cars are going to go 250 to 350 miles. How do we make it more efficient? But then it all comes full circle to what we started with, is fix the infrastructure. And I think everybody's woken up to that now, but it's going to take a few years. I mean, right now, and it's weird because, you know, as a business, Edmunds, we're testing EVs all the time and usually supportive of it. I really do believe in them. But right now, if it was like my only car, there's no way I'd buy an EV if I was traveling longer distances.
Yeah, right. It's interesting that you mentioned Jaguar. What happened to the I-Pace? That's never in the conversation.
Now, the I-Pace was a weird kind that it felt like a big opportunity at the time. Tesla was breaking through. They were quite early to market for the first time in, you know, in history. And then I don't know, like, I think in the US, there wasn't a lot of marketing money behind it. And, you know, then it quickly got overtaken myself. And also, it's just too expensive. I remember I wanted to look at leasing one when I got the Model 3, and it was just too much money. It's a shame because actually it was a good car, or still is a good car. You can still buy one.
But now they're used and they're 35 grand.
Yeah. And actually that might be quite a nice thing at 35 grand, 40 grand.
You know, 40 grand.
Yeah. You know, that'd be a nice, the range isn't so big. Right. But
do
it's
they,
actually,
do they,
you know,
work? I don't know if they work. I mean, do they just stop on the middle of the road? Because
no, I've not heard too many. They've been pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it's good looking and it's a good size. And
it's a good size. It's good looking. I also think probably in hindsight, what they needed was like an SUV, something that looked a bit more like the Model Y, whereas the I-Pace is a kind of hybrid of like a hatchback. And I don't know. It was a weird car. And also, like, what was also weird about that whole thing is they never did a Land Rover version or anything. So it was like they put all that money into a Jaguar. And they never did they could have easily spun off a Land Rover version, but never did.
Yeah. Yeah. Why not a Land Rover version? I mean, if you're going to do sort of this SUV-ish type of hatchback vehicle, why not Land Rover instead of Jaguar? Why not do sedan?
I think at the time everybody was obsessing about off-road capability and they were going to do a Land Rover that didn't have a lot of off-road capability. But
right.
Yeah.
Okay. So then they're saying, but SUVs sell here, so let's come up with a Jaguar version of it.
Yeah.
It's funny. It seems like it was one of the early vehicles out, and I drove one, had a good time in it, and never heard of it again. And it's still out. They're still selling it. I don't know what kind of changes or revisions have been made, or if it's just long in the tooth at this point. Have they made it more reliable? It doesn't seem like
I think it's just
long.
It's long in the tooth at the moment, which is a shame. You know, I think. Well, also that's dying in the same way that the I-Pace is dying in the same way that all the Jaguar ranges, and then Jaguar will be back with a new EV, which will be much more at market. So that's maybe we talk about this on another show. There's a lot to come from Jaguar, and they basically said, okay, what we've got at the moment isn't working. You know, having a kind of German copycat lineup isn't working. The I-Pace, as you say, is anonymous. So they're just killing off everything that they have. And then they will relaunch with what I believe is going to be a really striking, interesting EV at a high price point. So it's going to be a really interesting
journey.
Like
a luxury sedan,
they can pull
like
that
a full-size luxury
sedan.
Yeah,
big luxury.
Yeah.
Something that's going to be like really probably, maybe it'll even be polarizing, but it's a bold strategy. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they come up with.
Right.
And it's now all under the auspices of Jeremy McGovern, who is the chief designer of Land Rover. So the guy who's done, or not guy who's done, but the guy who's like led the team that's done the Range Rover and Range Rover Sport and everything else, is now looking after Jaguar as well. So a big change is there.
Okay, so listen, before we wrap up, I am going to head out to the Detroit Auto Show. I don't even know if that's what it's called anymore. But my first time going to Detroit Auto Show. I don't know why. Probably because
that's
it's
crazy.
In Detroit. And I'm expecting a Ford F-150, new F-150, or I don't know, some sort of mid-cycle refresh to an F-150. I'm not necessarily expecting a new Lightning yet. I think that's another year out. I'm not sure what their announcement is going to be. But I don't know. Should be kind of interesting. I'm sure there's going to be more stuff happening up there. And I know the last year or two when we talked to you, you weren't super enthusiastic about a Detroit Auto Show. It's kind of a ghost town.
I remember the glory days where like everybody was there. It was freezing cold. It was beginning of January. And I, you know, even when I lived in the UK, I used to travel out to it. And it was this ritual start of the year. I think like the big three up there are going to at least pay lip service. I know Ford's got some news, as you say. And so I'm not going personally, but I have got members of the Edmunds team up there. So we will have, you know, some of our news team are going up. I unfortunately had a clashing commitment. I hope it works. Detroit needs an auto show. So last year was a bit of a shambles because Joe Biden turned up and they kicked all the press out for 4 hours. So we turned up for press day. I got up at 4 a.m., arrived at 10 a.m. because I had to fly in, and then they kicked us all out for Joe Biden. None of that's happening last year. So that last year was a bit of a debacle on so many levels. You know, I kind of feel like this might be a last chance saloon. I hope it works. And, you know, let's see. I think L.A. is going to be decent in November as auto shows go. And then, you know, then we'll start again. There's also a Geneva Motor Show coming up in Qatar, which is a bit weird.
Why is it called the Geneva Motor Show if it's in Qatar?
The Geneva kind of auto show sort of like went down and then it got re-motioned. Hey, it's a weird world out there. It's all changed, my friend.
All right. Well, I guess you have a good trip on your adventure, and I'll try to do the same, and we'll get together next week and see what's happened in the world in the past week.
And I'll still, I might have calmed down by then.
Yeah, maybe I don't know. I saw your wife in the background. She's probably giving you the finger.
I don't think she's I don't think she's But no, I mean, it was fun. It was still a fun family vacation, but it was difficult. Yeah.
So the kids like trucks. They're a little iffy on EV. Like, Dad, why do you keep stopping and plugging this thing in?
Yeah. Why do we stop? Why do we stop where there isn't a playground?
Yeah, right. If you're gonna stop like someplace fun where we want to go, not so we can watch some guy at a Polestar watch a documentary that we can't even watch. We gotta peek through his window to watch it. All right, guys, thanks so much, and until next week, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.